Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Week 11. It is Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian, your host. My co-host today are Scott Fish and Brian Johnson.
I've never met this guy before.
It's been a while.
It has been a long time.
Well, like the very first show.
Weeks or something.
We did.
For you two to be together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Man, that's going back a ways. Holy cow. You know, back then, Jonnu Smith was good. All the running backs are healthy. It was a whole different landscape. That Christian McCaffrey still was a great pick.
Now it's Dan Arnold's time.
After his touchdown
on Thursday night, the Renaissance
cascade
is upon us. Yes.
Exactly. Plenty to get to over the course of the show. We'll break down every matchup, fantasy style, letter grades on all the meaningful players. We'll give you 9 players upon whom you can take a chance. We'll give you 3 tough questions to ponder. And, of course, premature speculation. My track record on premature speculation has been spotty this year, but last week, DeAndre Booker. And I thought about using again this week, but decided that was too easy.
It was just the revenge game. That's all it was
the revenge game. Maybe so. Let's dive right into the matchups, beginning with the Detroit Lions taking on the Carolina Panthers. Scott, it looks increasingly like DeAndre Swift will not play this game.
He is out.
100% out.
Yeah,
okay.
He is out. Yep. Him and Golladay have both been ruled out now. So Marvin Jones is limited in practice too. And Matthew Stafford's got the thumb injury. So it's going to be a little bit of a rough one there.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the C grade on Stafford. Carolina's been destroyed the last couple weeks through the air. It's a situation where I think he can get some deep balls off to Marvin Jones and Marvin Hall, the two Marvins, as you talked about the other week.
Yes. What are the odds?
And Hockenson has been incredibly consistent this year. All but 1 week, he had 50 yards and a score in all but 1 week. So I have an A grade on Hockenson. I think he's going to have to lean on Hockenson more with Golladay out. Both Jones and Hall, because Golladay's out, I've upped them to C grades. Marvin Hall is averaging well over 20 yards per reception, so it only takes a couple of them, and there's going to be targets to go around.
Yeah.
Amendola? Also out.
So
that means Jones and Hall are going to be on the field the entire time. That's why they both get C grades.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre Swift would have been an A grade with a smash spot.
Yes, he was in my top 5 earlier in the week.
Is there any chance the Lions bring back Drew Peacock, our beloved Peacock?
That would be the best.
They need a Drew Peacock in their lineup.
They do. And that's, if not now, when?
So Adrian Peterson has that was a terrible by transition, but I just got back to
just
work.
Just go right back.
I couldn't help myself.
No way to improve on that.
All right, yeah. For the Panthers are the 4th worst against fantasy running backs, so it was a great spot. Peterson and Kerryon are going to share, but Peterson has gotten more touches and more snaps than Kerryon every week that they've played together. So I am giving Peterson the B grade, and I'm benching Kerryon. I just don't trust that he's going to get enough work.
Mm-hmm.
He could, but do you want to try?
I really don't.
Yeah.
It's such a nice matchup for Peterson.
It is.
I would not be surprised if he finished 80 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, they're bottom 5 in rushing touchdowns and yards allowed. I think they've allowed like 9 touchdowns to running backs in the last like 5 weeks or so.
Okay, Scott, carry on.
Oh, Jesus. Oh,
did I redeem myself there?
No.
Damn.
No, I'm...
You're making it worse. You're digging a hole for yourself right now.
They're still not, on the other side, they're still not ruling out Bridgewater. If P.J. Walker is the starter, he might get a good amount of rushing yards to maybe be a dart throw. But I have them both on the bench just because you don't know at this point. I'm going to do the cop-out that Matt did with the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers a couple weeks ago, and I'm giving all 3 wide receivers for the Carolina Panthers C grades.
Boo.
Oh, I know you hate it.
I do.
DJ Moore has topped 55 yards in all but 1 game. He gets 50-plus yards every single week, 3, 4, 5 catches.
Mm-hmm.
That's solid enough for a C grade. Curtis Samuel had a down week last week, but he's had 50 total yards in 6 of his 7 games. Like, we're talking about guys that are going to get you 3, 4 receptions, 50-plus yards. Maybe they get a score. That's C-level production.
And it sounds like we've gotten to a point with Curtis Samuel where you can count on rushes from him.
Last week was a little bit of a dud.
In the red zone, too.
Yeah.
Inside the 10-yard line.
Weird.
Yeah.
Robbie Anderson started the season off really hot. He's been weaker lately, but he's still top five in yards, catches, and targets in the NFL, which is pretty crazy.
Yes.
And a stat I heard this week is that most of his yards and catches and have come against man coverage, and that's what the Lions mostly play. And Bridgewater's best games are against man coverage. So if Bridgewater does go, Robbie Anderson, even though I gave him a C grade, is probably the one of the three you want, because that's the type of defense that he excels against. Mike Davis, I have an A grade against the Lions here. The Lions are the worst in the NFL against fantasy running backs. Mm-hmm. Davis is a good pass catcher. Lions have allowed the most receiving yards, most receiving touchdowns over the last 5 weeks to running backs. On the ground, they're not much better. Most rushing touchdowns, sixth most rushing yards. And if P.J. Walker does start, rushing quarterbacks have opened stuff up for running backs. So it's just what they do.
It does happen, yeah.
So Mike Davis, I gave an A grade to.
Unless you're Kenyon Drake. At which point there is no such thing as a good enough rushing quarterback, apparently, to open things up for him. Mm. Let's go to Miami taking on Denver. Brian, for the Dolphins, we've got a lot of moving parts here, injuries at wide receiver and running back. We've got Tua at the helm. What are your thoughts on this offense as they face the Broncos?
Let's start at the running back position for Miami, because we got a bell cow on our hands in Salvin Ahmed. Jordan Howard is gone. Matt Breida spends more time in the blue tent than on the gridiron, and we'll see Ahmed operating as Miami's bell cow once again. And he scored from the 1 yard line last week. He's not a between the 20s pony here. So Denver's run D has been very leaky over the last 3 weeks too. They've allowed 153 rushing yards per game to opposing backs to go along with 5 ground scores. They've also allowed more than 5 catches per game to the position. Patrick Laird and DeAndre Washington might steal some third down work, but a very safe B for Salvin Ahmed. A B for Devontae Parker as well. He hasn't posted big numbers with Tua at quarterback, but his air yard shares have risen each week since Tua took over, from 18% to 31% to 37% last week. The Broncos held Raiders wide receivers scoreless last week. That's not hard to do. But before that, Denver surrendered 6 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 3 games. Denver's top corner, A.J. Bouye, might not play as well. He's questionable with a hip injury, so B for Parker with A upside. And I want to give a C to Jakeem Grant. I was on the field.
I'm really interested in Grant.
Jakeem the Dream.
And there's a great daily angle, which I was trying to give my followers last week, and it almost came through, but played in more than 75% of the snaps last week.
Mm-hmm.
And he returns kicks. So if you play a cheap wide receiver like Grant, who can produce on the field, and Miami's got a very viable team defense play this week.
They do.
And if he returns a kick, you get the double bonus points there. So if you're a daily player, that's some sage advice for you. Some more sage advice is benching Mike Gesicki.
Mm.
Yes, he put together consecutive games with more than one catch for the first time since weeks 1 and 2.
That's where the bar is right now.
With catch totals of 2 and 3. And this is a brutal matchup. Only one opposing tight end has cracked 50 yards against Denver, who also has not allowed a tight end touchdown since week 1, so I'm benching Gesicki.
Did you know Durham Smythe has played over him 2 out of the last 3 weeks?
Unbelievable. This is one of the most...
And then Adam Shaheen is a thing, too, that's always threatening Gesicki. So, yeah, he's fallen off the wayside. I'm on the fence with Tua Tagovailoa. I'll put him on the bench, though. He does have 2 passing touchdowns in back-to-back games with at least 6 rush attempts in each of those games, but he hasn't hit 30 pass attempts yet. He's just not enough volume there to trust him in standard formats for me. So a bench for Tua. Over to the Denver side, not a lot to love here. Melvin Gordon, a very soft C, only averaging 11 touches over the last 3 weeks. Miami has not allowed a back to top 90 rushing yards in their last 12 games and has held the position scoreless in 4 straight. So you're getting a little bit of volume from Gordon, but don't expect much.
Did you consider, instead of a soft C, giving him a strong D or a hard D?
No, I'm sure he didn't, because we don't use Ds on
I would
this show.
Never do such a thing, Scott.
That's right.
Never, ever, ever. And I would never play Phillip Lindsay, at least not right now. 4 carries for 2 yards and 1 target last week. He's on the bench. Jerry Jeudy, C for him, played through a shoulder injury last week. Looks like he'll play through an ankle issue that has limited him in practice this week. But he has commanded a target share of nearly 25% over the last 3 weeks, so you have to start him if he suits up. You will see a lot of Xavien Howard probably, but Howard has surrendered a score in two of his last three games, so I'm still starting Judy. I'm going to start Tim Patrick as well, giving him a C. The Dolphins only allow 20 points per game on a whole, but wide receivers have had success against Miami over the last 3 weeks, surrendering three touchdowns to the position in two 100-yard performances. Patrick has a very safe PPR floor. He scored double-digit PPR points in five of his last six games, including three touchdowns in that span. Noah Fant, last player with a starting grade, he gets a C. He's pretty banged up, but he should play. Hasn't delivered a score or a 50-yard game since week two. And the Dolphins have allowed the ninth fewest receptions and fourth fewest yards to opposing tight ends. That's not good, but you're hoping for a score here. Miami has given up three touchdowns to opposing tight ends over the last two games. And then Drew Lock, no young Jeezy this week. He's on the bench. And I got to leave us with this quote on this matchup. Drew Lock on his bad plays, quote, "Half the time, right as the ball leaves my hand, I'm like, oh no."
Half the time. You don't want to hear that half of your quarterback's passes, he instantly knows are in trouble.
Yeah. No takedown for Drew Lock this week.
No, I'm afraid not. Philadelphia takes on Cleveland. This will be our last matchup of this segment. Let's start with the running game and Miles Sanders. In his four full games, Sanders has averaged 16 rushes. Each of the backs who have hit 16 rushes against Cleveland have topped 100 yards. Sanders is averaging 5 targets per game, and the last two opposing backs that saw 5 targets per game combined for 130 yards and a touchdown.
He's got to start catching them. 14 catches on 30 targets is not good for a running back.
Well, but you know what? In that offense, it's probably much more on Carson Wentz, who has been tremendously inaccurate so far this year.
A ton of pressure.
So let's go right to Carson Wentz. I love that Wentz has got all of his available targets, but it hasn't changed his horrible protection. He is constantly being harassed. Wentz is bottom four in sacks and hits absorbed per Pro Football Focus. Or are you top four if you're getting the most hits?
I think you're top four.
Is that top four? But top's usually good if you're the tops of something. So either way, he's getting hit and sacked a lot. Now, fortunately, Cleveland's star defensive end, Myles Garrett, is out for this game. Mm-hmm. So maybe Wentz gets a cleaner pocket here, puts things together. That would be nice. Now, Cleveland's had their last two games, the last 3 weeks, have been monsoon, bye week, monsoon. So we really don't have an accurate read of where this defense is right now, but
maybe they'll treat it like a bye week with that
maybe
trend.
Prior to those two monsoon games in the bye week, they had allowed 3 to 4 passing touchdowns to half of the opposing quarterbacks. Wentz got some nice upside here. I'm going to give him a C grade in this matchup. Let's talk about his receivers a little bit. Jalen Reagor gets a B grade. Removing the past two games where there was all the wind and everything else in Cleveland, the monsoon games, they had been averaging 210 yards per game to receivers, which was third most. And since returning from injury, Jalen Reagor has led Philadelphia in targets, and last week he led the team with 96 air yards. I think they're starting to migrate towards Jalen Reagor. He is good. He's not as good as Justin Jefferson, who was taken after him, but he's good. And next, Travis Fulgham moves down to a C grade here. He had been very reliable when everybody else was hurt, but now that they're all back, Fulgham fell off the face of the earth last week with one catch. His usual safe floor is gone here. He runs from both sides of the field and is generally outmatched by both of Cleveland's cornerbacks, Terrence Mitchell and Denzel Ward. Let's go to Dallas Goedert, who is depressingly not produced with Zach Ertz out. I really thought with Ertz out that Goedert was going to go like into tight end one territory.
They need to be pushing each other in the lineup, I guess, right?
Maybe, I guess. The Browns have allowed the fifth most receptions to opposing tight ends, but most of the damage was done earlier in the season. They haven't done much lately. They've given up just one score and one 50-yard game over the last 5 weeks, including shutting down Darren Waller and Eric Ebron over that stretch. All right, let's go over to the Cleveland side. We begin with Austin Hooper. He's got an opportunity, which is odd to start with a tight end, but I am. He's got an opportunity to start to get back to his pre-appendix surgery form against a soft Eagles back seven. Philadelphia is allowing the fourth most receptions and touchdowns, as well as the ninth most yards to opposing tight ends. They've been using Jalen Mills to cover tight ends in man looks lately, and Hooper is 60 pounds heavier than the former cornerback. So if Jalen Mills ends up lining up against Hooper, that is a mismatch. And I like Hooper, and I start with him because he's got the highest grade of any of the receivers here. I will talk about Baker Mayfield in just a few minutes as well. Kareem, sticking with the receivers, let's go to Jarvis Landry, still scoreless on the season and has been held under 60 yards in 7 of 9 games. But he's set to face Philadelphia slot cornerback Kervon LeBlanc, who's been generous to his opposition. LeBlanc yields a 114 passer rating and is allowing an 81% catch rate. So even though the Eagles secondary surrendered the third fewest touchdowns to opposing receivers, Landry's got a positive matchup here, and this could be the one where he finally breaks his touchdown maiden for 2020.
Plus, he's had like a 30% target share in the last three weeks in a row. Yeah, so he gets
with Odell
a lot of
out.
Break yeah. his touchdown maiden?
Yeah, you like that?
I do.
For 2020.
You've never said that before, ever.
Yeah, there you go. Rashard Higgins is a startable commodity this week. He's the only other wideout who gets targeted really at all in this offense. Anytime he lines up on the left side of the field, he's got a very positive matchup against cornerback Avante Maddox, who Pro Football Focus ranks as cornerback 111. And Maddox yields 5 inches and 20 pounds to Higgins. So I kind of like Higgins as a dart throw in this one. And then let's go to the running backs, and we'll wrap this up. Nick Chubb has 100-plus rushing yards in each of his last 3 full games. But the Eagles have not allowed a back more than 63 rushing yards in their last 7 straight, and just one back has gone over 92 yards in the Eagles' last 28 games. That's incredibly impressive run defense. They're giving up just 3.3 yards per carry. Game script could be a problem for the Eagles are far easier to pass upon than run, so I'm nervous about Nick Chubb, and he drops to a B grade here. Kareem Hunt has maintained pretty much all of his workload with Chubb back. In Chubb's 4 full games, Hunt has averaged 15 carries for 77 yards, which is exactly what he was doing without Chubb. But again, tough matchup against a terrific run defense. And mysteriously, Hunt has not been using the passing game, which I don't understand. He's an incredibly gifted pass catcher.
Oh, and they do, though. He's scored, though. When they target him, he produces, but don't target him.
They don't target him. It's baffling. They need to unfurl that sooner or later. The Eagles have allowed just 2 receiving touchdowns to running backs in their last 26 games, so it's not happening this week, and Kareem Hunt is just a C grade. All right, when we come back, take a chance on me. These are 9 players, not normally in your starting lineup. Many of these guys are on the waiver wire. We've got some deep calls this week, and there are a lot of guys on the waiver wire. We'll tell you who they are when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Scott Fish, and Brian Johnson with you. It's a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. We give you a player at each position we believe you should take a chance on, and we begin at the quarterback position. Scott.
I am going to go with Taysom Hill. I know that you can play him at tight end.
It's some places.
In some silly places.
Great.
but come on, he gets the Falcons. They've allowed 8 300-plus yard passing days, 6 multi-touchdown games. I don't expect him to be a huge passer if he does get the start, but if he's going to have to pass, it might as well be against an easy pass
That's
defense.
Right. Yes.
What I do like is his rushing ability. It's shown good floors for fantasy quarterbacks. He has 7 yards per carry over the last 3, and the fact that he averages that in that last 3 games says to me, if he gets the ball, and he's averaging 7 carries per game also over the last 3. So if he gets 7 to 10 carries,
I like his chances,
and some passing yards, he's an okay take on.
Okay, I like it. We'll talk more about his position eligibility in some leagues later in the show.
Oh, there's an issue there?
Yeah, there isn't. Oh. There is an issue there. And my phone is blown up with people that want guidance on this. All right, Brian, your take a chance on me quarterback is
Joe Flacco at the Chargers.
I like it. He's available in 99% of leagues.
Flack at lack. I just wanted to say that.
I think you did.
Flack at lack. But the Chargers are one of 12 teams with an opponent passing play percentage north of 60%. They've also surrendered multiple touchdown passes in 5 of their last 6 games. And with a suddenly somewhat dangerous trio of wide receivers in New York now with Crowder, Perryman, and Mims, Flacco has looked pretty good, especially his last game out when he had 262 passing and 3 touchdowns against the Patriots. The return of starting left tackle Mekhi Becton has been huge, And Flacco's airing it out. He leads the NFL in most air yards per attempt at 9.5. He's the third lowest in checkdown percentage among all quarterbacks. I do not trust the run game for the Jets. That's no shocker.
Why should you?
And they'll be playing from behind. Joe Flacco is going to win someone $1 million this weekend. I hope it's me.
Okay. I might take a chance to be quarterback. Is Baker Mayfield, who I alluded to last segment. It's tough to evaluate the OBJ-less Browns offense when they've had a bye week and two monsoons since his injury. But in Baker Mayfield's last normal game, week 7, when Odell Beckham got knocked out very early, Mayfield still piled up 5 touchdowns without Odell Beckham. So he's got some sneaky upside against a Philadelphia secondary that looks good on paper, but has seen very few good passers. If we take away Philadelphia's games against Daniel Jones, Ben DiNucci, C.J. Beathard, Nick Mullins, and Dwayne Haskins, man, that's a lot of bad quarterbacks.
That is.
The Eagles are allowing 251 yards and 2.5 touchdown passes per game. The Eagles are a fantastic run defense, and the path of least resistance runs through Baker Mayfield's arm. Let's go to the running back position. Who is your taking chance on me, runner, Scott?
I am going a little deeper here with a backup, Rex Burkhead. He plays against the Texans, who have allowed the second running back, the backup running back, to average well over 50 yards per game. That's how many yards they give up to running backs. The backups are getting over 50 yards per game. Burkhead's getting a bunch of goal line work, has 3 touchdowns in the last 2 games. Mm. He's getting the goal line work when Cam Newton doesn't, basically. He is now playing 35% more snaps than James White over the last couple weeks. James White has kind of disappeared in that offense. Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone straight Casper on this.
And Burkhead's had 8 targets in the last 2 games. Mm-hmm. He's getting those targets. So I got Rex Burkhead.
All right, Brian, you're taking a chance on me, runner.
It's come to this for Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, it has. He's take a chance worthy.
At home against the Packers. Yeah, I was thinking of using Kalen Ballage, but that's too obvious these days. So I got to go to Jonathan Taylor, get contrarian with everyone's favorite rookie from not long ago. But Nyheim Hines, technically the starter now for the Colts. But the Colts will look to run the ball as much as possible against the Packers, keep Aaron Rodgers and company off the field for as long as they can. And yes, Taylor only handled 24% of the running back touches for the Colts in the last game. But in his 8-game career, his illustrious 8-game career, Jonathan Taylor, he already has more double-digit carry games than Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins in both of their respective careers. So there's a good chance he leads the team in carries against the Packers, who have allowed the second most fantasy points to running backs and have been especially bad since their week 5 bye. So now or never, Jonathan Taylor. It's like droppable in redraft formats if it's not this week.
You could almost start Taylor just on the fact that he's gotten so little use the last couple weeks.
Yeah, he's fresh.
That seems to be like when the guys pop out of the Indianapolis rotation of backs. It's inexplicable. Might take a chance on me running back is Devontae Booker. Now, you might be saying, where was that last week? Well, we did talk about him last week. So take that. He's averaging 6 yards per carry. His workload has increased in 4 straight games. And in the earlier matchup with this week's opponent, Kansas City, Booker had 62 yards on just 7 carries. John Gruden runs the ball a whopping 31 times per game, and the Chiefs are seeing 29 rushing attempts. So we know to expect a lot of ground and pound in this game, and Josh Jacobs is not going to get 31 or 29 carries. A bunch of it's going to go to Devontae Booker because he's just too good to keep off the field. Let's go to the receiver position, not necessarily wide receiver, Scott. Who is your take a chance on me player?
I'm going with Logan Thomas. Since Alex Smith took over, he's got 12 targets in the last 2 weeks. It's only culminated in 7 catches for 94 yards, but this week he gets a Bengals D that has given up 5 games of over 50 yards to tight ends, 6 tight end touchdowns in just the last 5 weeks, and this is a Bengals defense that has allowed 18 passing touchdowns over the last 6 weeks. I actually like Alex Smith this week, too. Give me Logan Thomas.
I've slowly moved Alex Smith up my rankings all week. I think now he's like quarterback 10.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, you take a chance from your receiver.
Give me Saints tight end Taysom Hill. I'm just kidding. I'm pairing Breshad Perriman with Flacket Lack. 2 Jets for me this week. Perriman was my pre-spec a few weeks ago. Looks like he's coming to fruition after a monster game against New England in week 9, 100-plus yards and 2 touchdowns. Not necessarily a smash spot here, as the Chargers have only surrendered a handful of big yardage outputs to opposing wide receivers, but they still allow 154 yards per game to the position. That's pretty decent. And since week four, LA has allowed 7 wide receiver touchdowns in 6 games, and that's basically been to 4 teams. Mm. The 2 teams that failed to score at wide receiver were the Michael Thomas-less Saints and the Dolphins last week, who only had 25 pass attempts. So I'm rolling with Perryman.
I'm going with Michael Gallup against the Vikings. The Vikings secondary is likely without its number 3, number 4, number 5 cornerbacks, and if Cameron Dantzler can't make his way through the concussion protocol, they're also without their number 1 cornerback.
And their number 1 cornerback's like a number 4 cornerback.
Not for anybody else. The Cowboys can stretch thin any secondary with their 3 excellent receivers. They get Andy Dalton back. What little help the Vikings can muster will be dedicated to stopping Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. And that leaves Michael Gallup most often on 6th-string cornerback Chris Boyd, who has allowed a passer rating of 134 in his coverage. There you go. 9 players. Take a chance on me. Let's work in one more matchup. The Atlanta Falcons take on the New Orleans Saints. The Saints side is a lot more interesting, but let's start with the Falcons side. Calvin Ridley likely back. This passing attack is at full strength. Do you like Matt Ryan?
I kind of do. After allowing multiple touchdowns in each of their first 7 games, this is the Saints. Mm-hmm. They have buckled down, picking off 5 passes and giving up just 1 touchdown in their last 2. Granted, one of them was San Francisco. The other was Tom Brady, though. They had a really good game against Tom Brady. And Lattimore should be back. He should be I think he's questionable. Should play. They still have Jenkins. They have a good pass defense. I'm giving Ryan a C, but it's a pretty strong C. I could go B, too. I could go B, too, but I'm going to leave it as a C. Julio Jones, 95-plus yards and or a touchdown in 4 straight. I got a B grade on him. I don't love either Jones or Ridley's matchups in this one, but they're just too good to sit.
Well, unless Lattimore doesn't go. If Lattimore doesn't go, game on, baby.
At the moment, I'm assuming that they go full strength.
Okay.
His lowest yardage game of the last 4 weeks was the Week 9 game without Ridley, weirdly.
Oh, yeah.
You'd think it'd be lower with Ridley there. Ridley, 60-plus yards in 6 of his 7 games, has 6 touchdowns in those. If he doesn't go, but he should go, Alameda Zaccheaus would get a C grade, but it sounds like Ridley's going.
So I think he's going.
I got a B grade on him, too. Hayden Hurst, I'm giving a C grade to, even though only 2 tight ends have top 50 yards, and both were because they were the top 2 receiving option on the team.
Mm-hmm.
They saw 6-plus targets, and players that get 6-plus targets against the Saints have done well. Hurst hit 50 yards in 5 of the 6 games. He hit 6 targets. I think if he can get that, he's got a fair shot at a C grade there. Todd Gurley, I don't super love him this week, but he gets so much volume. 18 plus touches in 5 straight.
Yeah, how he turns 18 touches into like 60 rushing yards every week.
It's those touchdowns.
Ridiculous.
The touchdowns
but he does
keeps him up.
He's got 9 touchdowns.
It's unreal. He scores all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The downside also, only 2 catches per game. And over his last 4, he's averaging 2.6 yards per carry.
Jeez.
As you just kind of alluded to. It's unreal. The Saints, on the other side, have given up over 100 total yards to just 1 back this year. So, as I said, don't love the matchup, but he gets so much volume and he gets those goal line touches. I got to give him the C grade.
Makes sense.
On the other side, Taysom Hill was my take a chance on me player at this point. We assume he's going to start, even though there's mind games going out there. Adam Schefter reported he'd taken all the first team snaps.
Yeah.
I think he's going to start. So he's my take a chance on me player. I have A grades on both Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. If Winston does start, Winston's 10 attempts last week, I believe he targeted Michael Thomas 5 times and twice in the end zone.
Yeah.
So if it's Winston, Thomas an A. If it's not, I feel like Taysom Hill's going to
know. Who do you trust more as a passer? Just as a pure
passer. You know
where
your bread is buttered, right?
Well, who do you trust more? As a passer, Winston or Hill?
Hill has 18 pass attempts in his career.
Correct.
I mean, yes, it's Winston.
How bizarre was the verbiage from Peyton where he's like, no offensive packages will Jameis Winston be involved in? That's like a failed smokescreen to me.
That was like he tipped his hand too much.
I don't know what that means entirely.
Like, who says that about anyone?
So you're not going to line him up at a receiver? What does that mean? Yeah, anyway.
On to Alvin Kamara. Why the A grade? The Falcons against pass-catching running backs for about 5 years in a row now. They allow 6 running back receptions per game. They can't seem to figure it out. And Alvin Kamara, I have to do some more research, but I think he's good.
As a receiver?
I think so.
Can I make note, though? He has never scored against the Atlanta Falcons in his career,
which is
crazy.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
I do have Murray on the bench, though. He hasn't topped 13 touches since week four. And normally 10 to 12 touches is good. But against the Falcons, no running back with fewer than 13 touches has topped 30 yards. So they allow 3.6 yards per carry. They keep people down, but not receiving backs.
Right.
So I'm benching Murray, giving Kamara the A.
All right, makes sense. We don't even need to talk about Jared Cook anymore, do we?
No.
I think you're probably right about that. At this stage, hopefully you're not so desperate that you're actually starting him. Hey, if you want all my player rankings, we encourage you to go to guillotineleagues.com. All the players ranked and many of them explained as well. You can read up on your favorite players, find out who to bench, who to start. Everybody's graded. You should also continue to listen to the show because coming up next, we got a block of matchups, including the Jets at the Chargers. Air Bear. There he is. There's the Air Bear.
There's the bear.
Justin Herbert. Will he thrash the Jets? Find out when we come back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly, Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. And Brian, you already told us you love the Jets' passing game as a dart throw.
Wacko for Flacco.
Yeah. What do you think about the rushing attack? Well, and is there anybody else that you want to talk about, like Denzel Mims, maybe?
Rushing attack. That's
rushing
funny.
Attack. Air quotes in there.
I got Frank Gore and LaMichael Perrine on the bench. It was a 50%, 46% snap split in favor of Gore last week. Gore saw 14 touches to just 8 from Perrine. I don't know if you'd want all 22 from just one guy in this game. It's an easy bench for me. An easy B, though, for Jamison Crowder. Only 2 catches on 2 targets in his last game, but one went for a touchdown. He's virtually a lock for 10-plus targets every week, running when healthy, which he is now. Running, and the Jets coming off their bye, by the way. Running from the slot, he'll avoid Casey Hayward. And with Chris Harris on IR, he draws rookie slot corner Tavon Campbell, who's allowed 2 scores in his last 3 games. So a B for Crowder. And Brashad Perryman was my take-a-chance-on-me wide receiver. It was a coin flip between he and Denzel Mims, who we like a lot on this show.
We're going to talk more about Mims later.
Even more about Mims later. But I went with Perryman. He does lead the Jets in first down receptions and yards per target with Flacco at quarterback. So I'm going to bench Mims for here for this week, but he should be rostered for sure. And Flacco, again, might take a chance on me quarterback. Flack at lack. Over to the Chargers side. An A for Kalen Ballage. I'm flabbergasted, flustered, all those adjectives. The Jets are top 5 in red zone touches and red zone targets yielded per game to opposing running backs. It's no surprise.
So is that bottom 5?
Top 5 in a good way, in the most red zone touches and red zone targets.
Good way for the Chargers.
For Kalen Ballage in particular, yes. It's no surprise the Jets have allowed the 8th most fantasy points to running backs, including the league's 5th most receptions to running backs at 58. Ballage has been very active catching the ball out of the backfield over the last 2 games, turning 9 targets into 7 catches for 49 yards and a touchdown. So an A for Kalen Ballage. Holy F. Over to Keenan Allen, going to give him an A as well. He was wide receiver 20, in late August.
I know.
That's criminal right now.
Yep.
He's eclipsed, has scored and or eclipsed 100 yards in 6 of his last 7 games. And here come the Jets, who are bottom 10 in yards, receptions, and fantasy points allowed to wide receivers. And that's bottom 10 in terms of the most, in a very good way, for Keenan Allen.
Yes.
And the Jets have also surrendered 4 touchdowns and 2 100-yard games to wide receivers over their last 3. For those very same reasons, I'm giving Mike Williams a very easy B here. And Hunter Henry gets a B as well. 4 tight ends have seen at least 4 targets against the Jets this year. All have put up at least 60 yards or a touchdown. Henry has 4 targets in all but 2 games this year. If you get opportunities against the Jets, you turn them into something. And that's why your boy, Charge, the Air Bear, Justin Herbert. Just a B, though. The haircut worries me. He looks like a 15.
Samson and Delilah.
He looks like he's
Samson.
Yeah, Samson. Samson. Yep.
Yeah.
It looks like a juvie mugshot now for Justin Herbert.
No,
but hey, that 14-year-old is leading rookies in passing.
That's right.
And you know what the Jets are not leading in is sacks. They only have 11 on the season. That's second fewest. Air Bear is going to have plenty of time to play with all of his toys. The Air Bear. I like it.
The Air Bear. There was a little aardvark in there for just a second, if you were wondering. Accidental aardvark appearance. He's not the fantasy aardvark, though.
Crossmate.
The aardvark.
Dr. Moreau over here.
Cincinnati and Washington face each other. Let's begin on the Cincinnati side, where Gio Bernard will get the start with Joe Mixon nursing his foot injury. Bernard will face a Washington run defense that has allowed just one back to top 86 rushing yards. But we just saw DeAndre Swift post a solid all-purpose game against Washington last week, so it can be done here by Bernard, both on the ground and through the air. Washington has given up a running back score one way or another in five of their last seven games. So I think Bernard gets a B grade. I like him here. Mm-hmm. Going to the passing game, Joe Burrow gets a C. Good defenses have mostly held Joe Burrow in check, and he'll face a good one this week. Washington is allowing the second fewest passing yards and the sixth fewest passing touchdowns. The Bengals' struggling offensive line is going to get ambushed by those four first-rounders that Washington's got on their defensive line, and I'm worried about Joe Burrow having time to get downfield. And that means I'm not crazy about his receivers either. We love T. Higgins on this show,
yes,
but this is a bad matchup. Now, he did practice on Friday. I think he plays here. I worry about Burrow having enough time to find him. He may have to settle for the underneath stuff to Higgins. Now, Higgins runs from both sides of the field, but when he runs from the left, he faces incredibly tough coverage from Kendall Fuller, who's been basically invincible before yielding a bit last week. Then Tyler Boyd gets a C grade. Did I say C grade on T. Higgins? If I didn't, he's a C grade. C grade on Tyler Boyd. Again, Washington secondary, very good. They've surrendered the second fewest fantasy points per game to opposing receivers. Boyd runs overwhelmingly from the slot. He'll face slot cornerback Jimmy Moreland most often. Moreland has yet to allow a score this season and has allowed 38 or fewer yards in his coverage in every game since week two. That is a bad matchup for Tyler Boyd, and he's just got to see. A.J. Green is on the bench. He's been held scoreless this year, and he has totaled 19 yards over the last two games.
That Andre Johnson level drop off there.
That is, isn't it? Remember when Andre Johnson hit the wall?
Yeah,
that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that comparison. That's very good. Let's go to Washington and start with the running game there. Antonio Gibson with the two touchdown game last week. Yeah, that felt good. He's a good player. He ranks third in missed tackles per rush attempt. Mm. That's very good. And he just passes the eye test.
He can see
that he's good. This is a far tougher matchup on the ground than through the air. Going all the way back to week three, Cincinnati has allowed just one rushing touchdown, and that was to Derrick Henry. And only Henry's top 75 rushing yards against Cincinnati. So this is a tough matchup, and I've only got a B grade on Gibson. I almost gave him a C, but I like him too much. So
imagine Gibson with his pass-catching skills without McKissick. He'd be like a top running back.
I know, and I don't understand why they never throw to him. He's a converted wideout. Yeah. He'll catch it if you throw to him. But they never do. Sticking with the running backs, let's go to J.D. McKissick. He's been a PPR superstar over the past couple of weeks with target totals of 14 and 15.
That's from Alex Smith. Yeah.
Yep. But those numbers are unsustainable, and he's only scored once all year, and the Bengals have been very good against receiving backs, allowing the third fewest receptions and only two receiving scores to running backs. So I only have a C grade on J.D. McKissick. We're not going to chase his production the past couple of weeks. All right, so let's go to the receiving game and the passing game. Scott, you and I talked about Alex Smith a little while ago. He has topped 300 yards in both of his full games and now meets his easiest opponent, Cincinnati. The Bengals' secondary has devolved before our very eyes over the past month. They've given up three touchdowns, five touchdowns, two touchdowns, and four passing touchdowns. Oof. So lots of upside for Alex Smith in this one. And that means I love Terry McLaurin, who's an obvious A grade. I don't even need to expound on him here. And Logan Thomas was your take a chance on me tight end receiver earlier today, Scott. So there you go. Let's go to our final matchup. It is the Patriots taking on the Houston Texans. Scott?
Sure. Cam Newton, the running back, right?
He's That's right. There's not even a reason to talk about him as a passer.
He only gets a C grade for me on his rushing ability and his ability to get touchdowns. Sure, he might get 150 yards, but it's all about the rushing for him. He's only has three passing touchdowns on the season. Mm-hmm. This Houston defense is a defense that he can work against. I have a B grade on Damian Harris. Such a good matchup for running backs.
It is.
It's hard not to like him. The main problem is Damian Harris doesn't catch passes, and he doesn't get touchdown opportunities.
Which he should, because he's built for goal line use. He's a bruiser.
Yeah, I don't get it, but Texans are second worst against fantasy running backs, allowing by far the most rushing yards to running backs, mm-hmm. which is what Harris gets. He has 52 touches in the last 3 weeks. I have a B grade on him, but I could go higher.
Yeah.
But I have a very, very solid, strong B grade. Then we get to the passing game. Because Newton doesn't throw a lot, I don't like a lot of the receiving options, except for the guy that has 40% plus target share in three straight games, Jacoby Myers. He gets everything that they throw. So he's the only one I trust. 60-plus yards in four straight games, averaging over 9 targets per game in that. The average stat line for wide receivers that get 9 targets a game, 8 for 134 and 1.25 touchdowns against Houston Texans.
Yeah, we would certainly take that. Yeah. Let me ask you this.
I don't know that he gets it, but I mean.
Do you think every time Cam throws to Jacoby, he just yells, Jacoby? You get maybe. What I'm saying.
Right? Kobe. I get it. I get it.
I have no
when you
idea.
Throw something like away, Charge, you say Kobe. Like Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Because it's like going in. You're going to score.
Oh, not Kobe. Throwing it away, not in the garbage.
No, not in a bad way.
Just
in a good
throwing,
way. Throwing it.
Throwing, period.
No.
Not throwing away. Jacoby, let's assume there's a quarterback upgrade of some kind coming next year for the Patriots. Jacoby Myers gets kind of interesting next season, doesn't he?
He does.
I picked him up in a couple of dynasty leagues just to see what happens over the offseason.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
On the other side of the ball, I'm going to be Oprah with some A's here. I'm going to give them away.
If at some point you need to award the Fantasy Aardvark, just let me know because I'm ready to go here.
I don't think so.
But so is the Aardvark. Okay.
Deshaun Watson, I'm giving an A grade to, multiple touchdowns in 6 of his last 7. New England has allowed the most 20-plus yard completions on the season. Could one of you guys do some research on me? 20-plus yard completions, a team that gives up a ton of them. Is that good for Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks?
That might match what they do well.
That might match what they do well. So I have A grades for both of them. Fuller had touchdowns of 6 straight before the monsoon.
If it's 2 A grades...
There you go.
That's your fantasy aardvark right there.
Pairing, 6 straight games with a touchdown before the bad weather game last week. Brandon Cooks, 8 targets in 5, at least 8 targets in 5 straight. And in the 4 that weren't hampered with terrible weather, he had 60-plus in each of them and scored in 3 of them. Also, if Gilmore misses, which he might, upgrade him even more.
Yeah.
Over on the running back side, Duke Johnson missed some practice this week with an illness. Sounds like he's going to go anyway. David Johnson is on IR, obviously. But I gave him a C grade. He has 30 carries in the last 2 weeks. He's getting so much volume. It's hard not to give him a C grade, even though he's only averaging 3.1 yards per carry.
Yeah.
Not that effective getting the touches, so I'm giving him a volume C.
A volume C. I like that. As I look forward to next week's show, Chris Carson likely to be back.
Yeah.
Does he immediately go right back to being the workhorse? Or do you think that they saw enough from Carlos Hyde and DJ Dallas and Travis Homer that they start distributing the ball a little bit more?
I think they would have seen enough from DJ Dallas a couple weeks ago when he had that big game, and then they went right back to Carlos Hyde. So I don't think so.
Hyde looked good on Thursday.
I know. I think they just go right back to Carson, honestly.
We have a lot of history that suggests that the Seahawks like their main heavy workload back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that probably goes right back to being Chris Carson. And he'll enjoy, 10 days off. Mm-hmm. So he ought to be fully healthy by then.
He was almost ready. So almost he's gotta be.
So there's a sneaky opportunity out there for Chris Carson to dominate fantasy leagues the rest of the way. This offense is so high scoring. There's so many scoring opportunities. Carson's a good running back, now healthy. Look what Carlos Hyde did, as fractionally as talented.
And Petey Sunshine had a quote this had a quote this week about wanting to get back to the run more. When everybody wants Russ to cook, he's like, I want to get back to the run more. So if that comes to fruition, Chris Carson.
Back to Chris Carson. I got this feeling we're going to be doling out a lot of A grades to Chris Carson between now and the Fantasy Football Championship. When we come back, three tough questions. I will pepper my co-hosts with, well, three tough questions. You get to play along, see if you can go 3-0 when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Hour number two, as usual, begins with a game we call Three Tough Questions. I will hit my co-hosts with three tough questions. They will try to get them correct. You can play along, try to go 3-0. We begin with
tough question number one.
And this is the biggie for the weekend, isn't it? Should commissioners in ESPN leagues where Taysom Hill is tight end eligible allow Hill to be played as a tight end? Scott?
Oh, man. If your question was, should he be allowed? I'd be like, no. But should commissioners in leagues that have been set up since the beginning to allow it? I got to say yes for this 1 week before they change it next week. I'm very against.
They're not changing it.
They might change it after this week. That's what they said. And it was also in Taysom Hill's outlook that if he starts at quarterback, they will change. They will strip the tight end designation.
They should. And they should have done it a long time ago. This has been a budding. Yep. This has been a budding problem waiting to happen for them for a long time. But continue.
I say that's. This has been the rule. This is the way it was set up. You got to play with it for this week. And when they strip it next week, it's gone. I don't like the decision that ESPN made. I don't like any of that. But I say you got to play with the rules that were in place.
Okay.
Yeah, if the site allows it, you'd have to adhere to the settings. Unless before the season, all the league members wrote in blood, we will not start Taysom Hill at quarterback. But this isn't the first instance of something like this. Several years ago, Joe Webb was wide receiver eligible, but he was starting at quarterback for the Vikings, and people got to play Joe Webb at wide receiver. And the most famous instance didn't involve a quarterback, but Marquez Colston in Yahoo leagues in like 2005 or 6 was tight end eligible, but he was clearly a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And I remember every week someone being like, you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, okay, but I'm gonna, because I'm allowed to. So that's the answer. Yes, it sucks, but that's the way it goes.
All right, well, first I will say this. ESPN should not have him as tight end eligible. They should have known this years ago. The problem goes back, like, when he entered the league, they didn't really know what to do with him and what position he was going to play, and he got designated as a tight end by somebody somewhere who, like, put a finger in the wind and went tight end. And because, I'm not going to even speculate, but ESPN and others continue to carry that tag as tight end for years and years and years forward. Despite the fact Taysom Hill's never once appeared on an NFL roster as listed as tight end.
Nope.
Not once. Mm. So ESPN should never have had it this way.
Right.
Taysom Hill as a tight end is a loophole. If you've got Taysom Hill and you're starting him as a tight end, it is a cheap and unfair advantage.
I agree.
That you are putting on your league. I personally question your personal integrity and your sense of fair play. I don't run any leagues on ESPN. If I did and I had Hill, I would only start him at quarterback. I would not start him at tight end. I don't care who my tight end is. I wouldn't do it because in my heart, I know he's not a tight end. And I care about my personal integrity more than I care about trying to find a loophole for a victory. That's not how I want to win. Now, commissioners, I want to talk to you for just a minute. Who runs your league? Is it you? Or is it your software? Who runs your league? Does the software dictate who runs your league, or do you run your league? This, you need to make this call. And simply abdicating to the software is spineless.
This is like you Dwight versus the computer.
I like that my bylaws in my league specifically state we are at the complete mercy of the designations of the site.
Which you can do. And that's great. And that, well, you, someone, at that point,
someone,
everybody
that, someone, that's someone, public someone, offering, though. You have to do
no,
that.
No, that's my private leagues, too.
Oh, okay.
But still, the Taysom Hill owner would argue with me, hey, this is what your bylaw says.
If it's in the bylaws one way or another,
yeah,
you live by those bylaws for sure. 99% of our listeners do not have this situation in their bylaws.
Yeah, I write
deal
novels.
With.
Yeah.
So, commissioners, you need to make a call. But let me give you a little bit of data. Taysom Hill has played 42 snaps this year at quarterback. 42. He has played 56 snaps at wide receiver. He's played 32 snaps at tight end. So he has played at the tight end position. It's fair to say he's not a tight end, but he plays at least some tight end.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a case, and you should make the call, commissioners, that he should be allowed to be a tight end. Now, my preference and the correct answer is, should Taysom Hill be allowed, should commissioners allow him to be played as a tight end? Yes, he should. Because of the 32 snaps at tight end. That said, those of you that have him, I hope you will play with integrity and you will not start him that way, because winning a game of fantasy football is not worth the loss of integrity for yourself or the league when you know he's a quarterback.
Tough question number two.
Alex Smith has posted back-to-back 300-yard games. Will Alex Smith finish the year as a top six quarterback, a 7-12 quarterback, or worse than 12th? Brian.
Have to mention that back-to-back 300-yard games, yes, but just one passing touchdown across those two games. So top six, if he's going to finish top six, he's not going to beat out Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen in no particular order. That leaves two spots. In those two spots, he's still got to compete with Aaron Rodgers, Air Bear, L-Jax, Deshaun Watson, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady. He's not finishing top six. And that really doesn't leave a whole lot of meat on the bone for 7-12, because Ryan Tannehill is still in the mix. Joe Burrow, I know Fish has a lot of stats that are probably going to support the same answer, but he's worse than 12th. But he's it's great to see him back.
Okay. You say 12-plus.
12-plus.
All right, Scott.
This is easy. He's scored 34 fantasy points. QB12 has scored 185 fantasy points. He's got 151 fantasy points to make up. Just
clearly, the question was,
why didn't I think of that?
From this point forward.
Okay.
All right.
So he has very positive matchups against the Bengals. I think those touchdowns are coming this week.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle, Carolina, even a decent matchup against Dallas. San Francisco's given up like four huge games in the past 6 weeks, even though they're a middle of the road defense. The only tough spot is Pittsburgh. That said, Brian gave the list. I just don't see how he can. I don't see how he can get to top six at all. I have trouble even seeing him.
So is he in the second tier of six?
I can see him getting into that 10 to 12 range, but if I had to place money on it...
And you do. That's how this game works.
I'm going to go worse than 12th.
Washington's path to victory, real-life victories, is with an efficient Alex Smith, which is in his DNA anyway, because that's who
he is. It really
is,
yeah.
You know, they want to continue to play very good defense, which Washington has. They want to run Antonio Gibson a fair amount because he's pretty special, and mix in a lot of high percentage passing from Alex Smith. In these two games with the 300 yards, he's completed 72% of his passes.
Throwing a lot.
Very efficient. Only the one touchdown, which you mentioned. Efficiency does not equal fantasy stats. He doesn't have the receivers.
Are you saying Teddy Bridgewater is the...
That's kind of what I'm saying. He doesn't have the receivers to unlock big performances. He's only got the one receiver, Terry McLaurin. And here's really, I think, the crowning blow. In his 15-year career, Alex Smith has never, not once, finished as a top 12 quarterback.
Not even the MVP year. He probably got hurt at the end.
Even in the old days when he had some mobility.
He wasn't MVP. He was in the running.
He was in the running. Yeah.
That one year.
I thought you meant on a weekly basis for a second, but that's not what you meant.
Finished a season as a top 12 quarterback.
Wow.
In his 15-year career. So the answer is worse than 12.
Tough question number 3.
Minnesota wide receiver Justin Jefferson leads all rookie receivers by almost 150 yards. Is he an every week starter, Scott?
50% of the time, he's an every week starter all the time. he has the chance.
The movie that keeps on giving.
Yeah, that was 60% of the movie. But half the time, he has boom games. The other half the time, not so much. He's got that Brandon Cooks, Will Fuller, Amari Cooper, Lee Evans type of.
Remember Lee Evans with those
4 to 6 big games a year? That was it.
Oh, with Peerless Price on the other side, right? Drew Bledsoe, I believe.
He has just two negative matchups left on the schedule. One is against the Bears, who he just torched. Mm-hmm. But you can't bench Justin Jefferson just because those explosions are going to happen. I think he's flex-worthy at minimum every single week. So, yeah, he's an every-week starter.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, on a PPR points-per-game basis right now, he's wide receiver 20, and that's after a very slow start to the season, which is understandable for a rookie where he had 6 targets across his first 2 games. Now, since week 3, the target totals have been a bit of a roller coaster ride. It's gone 9, 5, 5, up to 11, then 4, 4, then back up to 10 last week. But he checks virtually every box when it comes to the eye test, and he can turn one target into a productive box score. And there's no way he falls below wide receiver 3 or flex territory any given week, even based on matchups. So, yes, an every week starter moving forward.
Justin Jefferson is ahead of Randy Moss's epic rookie season by yards. He's already at 760 yards. He is a deep downfield threat, averaging 18 yards per reception, which is fourth most in the entire NFL, not just among rookies. And despite how deep those passes are, he's got the 7th highest catch rate in the NFL. Normally, your deep ball receivers have a low catch rate because those are hard to complete passes.
Right.
But here's the problem. Dalvin Cook, he's so good, and the Vikings are so run-oriented. Minnesota's dead last in pass attempts, 27. When you divide up 27 pass attempts among all the wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, there are just some games that Justin Jefferson can't be a big part of.
Right.
But here's why he's still an every-week starter. There isn't necessarily a script for knowing when the dud game is going to come. It could have come against Chicago. It didn't. And even in games where Dalvin Cook has had high usage games, Justin Jefferson's posted good games in some of those too. So he is an every week starter, but that doesn't mean he's going to turn out every week big totals because the volume's not going to be there some games.
So couldn't you have just said, okay, Scott, what you said, ditto?
Well, why? I can't give you that kind of credit. I'm sorry. No, I can't do that. Brian, Green Bay takes on the Indianapolis Colts. This is the toughest matchup of the year for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and this would be a shootout in years past.
Yeah, right.
But not so much this year. We'll start with Aaron Jones on the Packers side. Going to give him a B despite the painstaking overusage of Jamal Williams. Jones has still garnered at least 15 touches in every game he's played this year, and his role is expanding at receiver. Last week, he played 8 snaps lined up either in the slot or out wide, so his usage is expanding all over the field. In a tough spot, though, against the Colts, who are ranked 4th against the run by Football Outsiders. Indy has allowed just 7 total touchdowns to running backs this year, but 6 of those 7 touchdowns have come over the last 5 games, so there's hope Jones can score in this one. Still going to give him a B. I'm going to bench Jamal Williams, though. Only one opposing running back has managed to top 100 combo yards against the Colts. And, of course, Williams is not the lead back for this team.
No, right. We're not going depth backs against
the Colts. And that one back who topped 100 combo yards was Derrick Henry, who ran for over 100 yards and added, two receiving yards or something. So
I will say, if Davante Adams doesn't go, which he should go, Jamal Adams in his last 3 games without Davante Adams has 2 receiving touchdowns and an 8 catch game.
Yeah,
he gets involved in the passing.
If Adams does not go, you're absolutely
maybe
right.
Maybe flex-worthy.
Yeah, a few players will get bumped up into a C range if Adams.
Robert Tonyan would be one. Remember, Tonyan's big games happened without Adams,
too.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm going to assume Adams
plays.
He practiced on Friday.
Yep.
I'm going to give him an A. He's banged up, and it's not a great matchup, but Adams is an auto A at this point, regardless of matchup or weather, which has been proven over the last couple weeks.
True.
The Colts did just hold A.J. Brown to one catch for 21 yards, but Brown did drop a 70-yard touchdown bomb twice on the same route, bobbled it, dropped it again.
Yeah.
And Adams should see a lot of Xavier Rhodes, a very familiar face from Rhodes' time with the Vikings. Adams has had either 100 yards or a touchdown the last six times he faced off against Xavier Rhodes.
Jeez.
So I'm giving Adams an A here. And if Adams plays, I'm benching all the other pass catchers not named Adams. Alan Lazard, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I don't even know if Lazard is coming back this week. And
he
even
might.
Robert.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, but it's a tough matchup against the Colts. So all their pass catchers are on the bench for me. And Aaron Rodgers just off the bench. Going to give him a C. The Colts defense ranks third in passing touchdowns allowed, and that means the fewest. Bad for Rodgers. And first in passing yards allowed, the fewest. And Rodgers has faced one other defense that's been comparable to the Colts, and that was Tampa Bay, and they pretty much shut him out. So a tepid C for Aaron Rodgers. A lot of trepidation for the Colts side. Nyheim Hines, going to give him a C. Looks like the lead back, but he's followed up these monster games with duds.
Remember week one, everybody ran to the waiver wire to get Nyheim Hines, and then in week two, do you remember how many touches he had? One.
See, I ran to get him in week one knowing I was going to stash him till week 10.
Yeah, that's right.
I do.
Arbitrarily play him in week 10.
Yeah.
And only week 10.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a great matchup, though, for running backs, but I got Jonathan Taylor as my take a chance on me running back. And if I had to pick between the two, I'm going to ride with Taylor this week. We'll see how that plays out. I'm going to bench both Michael Pittman and T.Y. Hilton. Pittman is the lead receiver on this team as far as I'm concerned at this point. He's really coming on strong. But both starting cornerbacks for the Packers, Jair Alexander, who might be the best cornerback outside of Jalen Ramsey in the NFL, will probably be shadowing Pittman, and Kevin King also making their return from injury, so both the receivers on the bench, as are the tight ends for the Colts. Mo Alie-Cox out-targeted Trey Burton last week. Jack Doyle is slated to return again.
Yeah,
they're all on the bench, and so is Phillip Rivers. Six of the last eight quarterbacks who face Green Bay have basically finished outside the top 20 range, and that secondary was dinged during that tenure, so easy bench for Phil.
By the way, Michael Pittman's like 20% rostered. Everybody go get him.
Go get Michael Pittman. And if you're in a dynasty league, for the love of God, get him. Although we don't know who his quarterback's going to be next year even. It'll be somebody better than who they got now,
yeah,
in all probability. But I couldn't tell you who it is. That is a tricky spot for the Colts. Next year, who is your quarterback? Because you're too good to land a premier quarterback in the draft. When we come back, the Dallas Cowboys face the Vikings. Will Andy Dalton spark the passing game back to life? Find out when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly on The Fan. Paul Charchin with you. Scott Fish, Brian Johnson. Cowboys go to Minnesota. Start with the passing game. Andy Dalton back under center. He battled concussions, then COVID. Now he's back. But remember, he looked really bad last time we saw him. Dallas does attack with three excellent receivers, each of whom is far better than the Vikings' cornerback counterparts. Even if Cameron Dantzler, their presumptive number one cornerback, is able to clear the concussion protocol. Prior to facing the completely helpless Bears offense last week, the Vikings were allowing almost 300 yards and 2.5 touchdowns per game. That is a lot. Andy Dalton is a legitimate starter in this offense. I've got him against the Vikings. I've got him with a C grade, but he does have B grade upside, but I'm giving him a C grade here to play it safe. Amari Cooper, B grade. In three games, Dalton has been under center. Cooper's seen 18 targets from Dalton and led the team with 7 catches, 79 yards, and 1 touchdown in the one game Dalton started and finished. If we're going to get the same thing from Dalton, I would take that. 7 catches, 79 yards, and 1 touchdown. Cooper draws the Vikings, probably the Vikings' most favorable matchup against Chris Jones, allowing a passer rating of 132 in his coverage. CeeDee Lamb works out of the slot, and he has actually seen the most targets from Dalton. And running from the slot, he'll face off against Jeff Gladney in all probability. Gladney's given up 5 touchdowns and is allowing a passer rating of 128 in his coverage, so I've got a B grade on CeeDee Lamb. C grade on Michael Gallup. He was my take a chance on me wide receiver against this already thin Viking secondary. And let's go to the running game. Zeke. I've never been more unhappy to be right about a preseason prediction. But this is everything we worried about with Zeke in the offseason. He's failing the eye test, and the analytics are not favorable either. Compared to Tony Pollard, running with the exact same offense, Zeke is averaging fewer yards per carry, fewer yards after contact, fewer forced missed tackles than Tony Pollard. Pollard's the better running back right now. That doesn't mean Pollard's going to get more work. Yet.
I'd even start guys like Gio over Zeke right now.
Oh, yeah. I think I would, too. And I've only have a C grade on Zeke. Minnesota, and here's a part of it, is Minnesota's run defense suddenly very good. They've only allowed 1 total touchdown to running backs over the last 5 games. And during that span, no back has managed to crack 75 rushing yards. That said, the Vikings have yielded the 2nd most touches to running backs in goal-to-go scenarios. So maybe those touches go to Zeke. They're still giving Zeke the ball at the goal line, so maybe he gets a touchdown here, and that's where the C grade comes from. Let's go to Minnesota. Dalvin Cook is fascinating, and normally this is where I would just say, Dalvin Cook, he's an obvious 8. Let's move on. But I want to spend a minute talking about the 32 touches he had, the 24 touches he had, and the 34 touches he's had the 3 weeks since coming back from injury.
A lot of touch.
A whole lot of touching. And I gotta wonder if Dalvin Cook will be rested a bit in this game. And especially if you believe the Vikings are, I don't know, like 10-point favorites or something. Especially if the Vikings are going to get ahead in this one, we might see a lot of Alexander Mattison to try to keep some fresh legs for Dalvin Cook. And that part does worry me a little bit. Still, if the Vikings do get ahead, Dalvin Cook's probably already had a good game. So, he's still an A grade, but I'm just putting that out there that I think there's a scenario where they rest him a bit. Dallas is allowing 127 rushing yards per game to running backs, and they've already let 3 different backs record multiple touchdown games. So Dalvin Cook an A. If you feel like throwing darts, you could go to Alexander Mattison, but I don't have a starting grade on it.
And I'm going
to
guess those 3 backs that scored multiple touchdowns were not as good as Dalvin Cook.
Well, no, I don't think from right now.
Unless it was
frankly,
Alvin
Kamara.
I don't think anybody's
as good as Dalvin Cook right now. Let's go to the passing game. Kirk Cousins gets a B grade. Now, Cousins often suffers from these Dalvin-heavy game plans. But as I just explained, I think they could dial back Dalvin in this one a lot to keep him fresh. And I think there's a little upside on Cousins for volume. But even if he doesn't get it, that's the beauty of playing the Cowboys. They give up big games even without seeing many passes. In recent games, Kyler Murray, Kyle Allen, and Carson Wentz only threw 24, 25, and 27 passes. They all scored 2 times. What's more, Dallas has allowed multiple passing touchdowns in every game since the opener. I think Kirk Cousins is sitting on multiple passing touchdowns. And if I like Cousins as a B grade, I must like his receivers, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. They both come in with B grades as well. For Thielen, he's become touchdown dependent, and this is an ideal matchup. Thielen's been Kirk Cousins' favorite red zone weapon, drawing a team-leading 14 red zone targets. Dallas has allowed 16 touchdowns to receivers. That is the most, including allowing multiple receiver scores in 3 of the past 4 games, and I expect that to happen here as well. Justin Jefferson, as I mentioned already, already a B grade. Dallas has allowed 16 touchdowns to receivers, which I just said, and I think this is an excellent opportunity for him as well. Trayvon Diggs is out, cornerback. Jefferson has a dream matchup against an inexperienced, undrafted rookie in Savion Smith, who has played just 14 defensive snaps in the NFL against Justin Jefferson. That is a rookie-on-rookie matchup that heavily favors Justin Jefferson.
Savory.
It is savory. Irv Smith is shaping up as a game-time decision. If he does not go, you can start Kyle Rudolph, much like last week. Good tight ends are generally faring well against Dallas, and if Kyle Rudolph's going to get the overwhelming majority of the tight end snaps, he is a guy that you can use. All right, let's go to our next matchup, which is The Pittsburgh Steelers taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Scott, I actually want to start with James Conner in this one.
Yeah.
He has been stone cold for a month.
Yeah.
Even in favorable matchups, games where you'd think he would do really well.
Yep.
Bad field conditions where he should be running, the whole thing. None of it's worked for James Conner, but here comes the Jags. What do you think?
You know what else is bad? They got up by a couple scores on the Bengals. Didn't care.
Didn't matter.
Kept throwing.
Right.
Kept throwing. Didn't even care. Gabe Conner, 9 carries the week before, 13 carries last week, even up big points.
Right.
They did not care. They just keep throwing. And that's the big problem. I am giving Conner a C grade here, but as you alluded to, under 60 yards in 3 straight, hasn't had more than 3 catches in a game since week 3.
Ugh.
So he's not even getting the receiving work. It's all going to... You know, they're amazing receivers. They just have a ton of options.
Now, you think that at some point they're going to start switching to Benny Snell, Anthony McFarland, because James Conner ain't getting it done.
See, I don't know. I mean, Snell has 6 carries in the last 2 weeks for 13 yards. You know,
I know. Like, it's not, no, I'm just talking future.
It's not a whole else.
I don't know. There might be a spot to speculate there.
McFarland, 3 for 7 yards in the last 2 weeks. So,
yeah. All right.
I did give him a C grade
because
he's going to get the volume. Mm-hmm. He'll get 10, 12, 13 carries. He might get a reception or two. He might get you 50, 60 yards, maybe. So I give him a C grade here. I'm giving Ben an A grade. I'm giving Juju an A grade. Mm. I'm giving Claypool an A grade. I'm giving Deontay Johnson an A grade. I don't even care because, as I said, they just keep throwing the ball and they keep racking up scores. The Jags are bottom 10 in passing yards and passing touchdowns alone, mm-hmm. allowed. Steelers hitting their stride right now. Juju has averaged over 10 targets per week over the last 4, topping 6 for 67 and scoring in 2 of them, topping 6 for 67 in all of them.
But most importantly, Scott, it's his birthday on Sunday,
boy.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
There you go. His yardage totals are the low ones, though, because Deontay Johnson, he's the deeper guy. Claypool's the deeper guy. Deontay Johnson, double-digit targets in every full game he's played.
Yes.
That's the
Wait,
problem.
He's played one of those?
He has played 4 of those. He has 4 scores in those games and at least 77 yards in each of those games. Claypool... let's talk about the rushing. 9 carries and 2 touchdowns rushing.
Yeah, he's RB like 27 right now.
James Conner just shaking his fist. He probably is. He's rung up 32 targets in the last 3 weeks as well. They're all averaging 10-plus targets a game. 3 scores in that span. I don't care. I'm giving them all A's. Maybe one of them turns in a B performance. You don't know which one's going to blow up, though, and they should all be fine.
Watch. James Washington, 4 touchdowns.
Oh, that would be insane. On the other side, I'm giving a bench grade to Jake Luton. The Steelers have not allowed a single top 12 fantasy day from a quarterback yet this year. Mm. They're getting pressure on the quarterback 35% of the time. They're dialing up a blitz 42% of the time. If they do that on a rookie quarterback like Luton, I don't have a lot of faith in what he can do. They haven't allowed over 250 yards passing since week 5 either.
Wow.
DJ Chark, I'm giving a B grade, though, too, because with Luton in, Luton is just lasered in on him. 17 targets in the last 2 weeks. Similar sized number one receivers against the Steelers have actually had decent days against them. So I think if Luton gives him enough volume, he could get up to that B grade.
Okay.
I don't think Cole's getting there, though. He's been a 40 to 50 yard guy every week, except for one blow up where he had 3 huge plays in garbage time. Otherwise, he's like a 40 yard guy and you hope for a touchdown. I think it's only about Shark here. In the running game, Robinson, B grade. I won't sugarcoat it, though. It's not a great matchup. But Robinson gets 90% of the touches.
No, he leads all backs in percentage of work.
The last 4 backs to hit 15 touches against the Steelers all had 70-plus yards. And 15 touches for Robinson is like, and that's below his floor. He's a guy that's more likely to get 20 to 25. He's had 25 or more in 3 straight games. So
yeah.
I gave him the B grade.
Rams take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Brian, we all started every part of the Rams passing game last week in the seemingly obvious matchup against Seattle. We got nothing. Now, here comes a much, much tougher test against Tampa Bay. Do we dare go back to Jared Goff and company?
No. Not at least not Goff. The last time Goff flew to Florida, things did not end well. flying across the country. We went to play in Miami. I think he had about four or five turnovers. I hate golf in Florida, and I don't like a lot of his pass catchers. The only one I truly like is Cooper Kupp. Can give him a B. Kupp has seen at least 7 targets in 6 of the past 7 games. Tampa Bay has surrendered a touchdown from the slot in 3 of the past 4 games. Kupp will see plenty. Sean Murphy bunting, who has yielded a total of 4 scores and is allowing a passer rating of 129 in his coverage. So a B for Kupp.
You made him sound Irish when you called him Sean Murphy bunting.
Well, that was kind of what I was going for.
Okay,
but the O was like plenty of Sean.
Okay. All right.
But to the other receivers, Robert Woods and Josh Reynolds. I wanted to write a Reynolds rap this week, but they're both on the bench, so we'll have to save that for later. Woods has seen 9 fewer targets than Josh Reynolds over the last 3 games and has failed to reach 35 yards in 3 of those past 4, Robert Woods, that is. And over the past 5 games as a whole, this is a bad matchup for both. The Buccaneers have only allowed 2 receivers who top 75 yards. They'll both face a tricky matchup in Jamel Dean, probably more so Woods, but Dean is allowing just 31 yards per game in his coverage and is ranked 9th among corners by Pro Football Focus. So Woods and Reynolds are on the bench for me this week, but they're both should still be rostered, of course. And then Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett, I have them on the bench as well. The Bucs have allowed 3 tight end touchdowns over the last 2 games to the likes of Adam Troutman, Josh Hill, and Colin Thompson.
Who?
That was his
Carolina's
first career catch.
Colin Thompson. But opposing tight ends are averaging 5 catches for 50 plus yards. That's decent, but this is just a coin flip I want no part of between Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. So they're both on the bench. And all the running backs for the Rams on the bench as well. Last week, here's the snap share breakdown. Malcolm Brown, 41%. Darrell Henderson, 33%. Cam Akers, 26%.
And he's the one that got the start, too.
Yeah. Akers led the way with 10 opportunities, and opportunities either a carry or a target. The other 2 had 8. And this is just a brutal matchup. Tampa Bay ranked 2nd against the run by Football Outsiders. Opposing running backs are averaging less than 100 combo yards per game.
Total.
That is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Rushing, receiving yards, under 100. And less than a touchdown per game, so they're both on the bench. Quickly over to the Tampa Bay side, Ronald Jones, going to give him a C. Need to eat some crow here. We were really ragging on Ronald Jones last week.
Well, and rightfully so.
Right, maybe.
What's our anti peacock sound?
Did we establish if we have an anti peacock
sound?
The barnyard is gone way too big.
I don't know. There's a turkey on there, I think.
But Ronald Jones looks to be the Bucs' lead back again, assuming Jones handles the bulk of touches, which again is never a safe assumption in Tampa Bay. He'll have a tough matchup in the Rams. Los Angeles has only allowed 5 total touchdowns to running backs this year, and since week 4, no lone back has managed to top 80 combo yards against the Rams. So it's just an awful matchup for running backs on both sides, but I will give Jones the C. I'm going to bench Mike Evans because I'm going to assume he sees the most of Jalen Ramsey, which is just a hard stop.
I assume so, too.
Anyone who's going to see the majority of Jalen Ramsey, you got to bench him. I don't care who they are at this point. Davante Adams, maybe, but we'll see if we ever get there. But anyway, that gives
Dan
leads
Arnold?
Me, definitely not. That leads me to believe Antonio Brown deserves a C. 29% target share since starting to share bunk beds with Tom Brady. He should have had a 50-plus yard touchdown last week as well. Brady overthrew him. Now Brown could see an equal amount of Jalen Ramsey here, but I still think Evans sees the majority of shadow coverage from Ramsey. But on a whole, the Rams are allowing the fewest yards to opposing wide receivers, just 127 per game, and they haven't allowed a receiver to top 70 yards in the past 6. So just a C for Brown. Chris Godwin doesn't give him a C, too, but he feels like the safer C to me. Godwin has at least 6 targets in every game. He definitely won't see Jalen Ramsey. Instead, he gets slot corner Troy Hill, who is allowing 42 yards per game and a passer rating of 95 in his coverage. Not amazing numbers, but it's the best you're going to get.
It would
go up against the Rams. Actually, the best you're going to get is probably Rob Gronkowski. I'm going to give him a B. A lot of mouths to feed in Tampa Bay, of course, but his matchup is with Kenny Young, who allows an 85% catch rate in coverage, and he's Pro Football Focus's worst graded tight end defender. So Gronk, probably your safest pass catcher this week with a B. And because I'm ragging on all the pass catchers, just a C for Tom Brady. The Rams secondary has been great. Blanked Russell Wilson last week. Non-Josh Allen quarterbacks have averaged a paltry 210 yards and
.6
passing touchdowns. Not good. But that list does include Daniel Jones, Kyle Allen,
Alex Smith hybrid in Washington, Nick Foles, Tua, not too impressive. So you're not benching Brady, but temper your expectations.
All right, that sounds like a very good plan. When we come back, premature speculation. This is the bit where we give you players you want to pick up now that everybody else is going to be trying to pick up next week, but they're already on your roster because you jumped into the premature speculation time machine. Sounds just like that. Also, from last segment, if you can figure out the natural predator to the peacock, let us know so we can start getting the natural predator to the peacock on at the button bar here, because we're a little bit flummoxed by that. What eats a peacock? What doesn't eat a peacock? I don't know.
I'm going to Google that right now.
Dogs,
I'm
cats,
nervous about what
raccoon,
I'll
find. Raccoon, tiger, and mongoose.
We need
the mongoose.
The fantasy mongoose.
Yeah.
For when we have to anti-peacock, that would be awesome. The fantasy mongoose. Ricky Tikki Tavi coming up when we come back to Fantasy Football
Deep
Weekly.
Cut. Nice.
Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Scott Fish, and Brian Johnson. If you're listening over the air, we are also a podcast. Look for the Fantasy Football Weekly podcast on whatever platform you prefer to get your podcasts on. We're pretty much everywhere. And thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show. We always are grateful, and we care what you think. This segment is called Premature Speculation. We give you three players to pick up that other people will be trying to pick up next week, but you're ahead of the game. Scott, who you got?
So I got a kind of a weird one here because he's going to be on bye. So I want you to get him before the waivers after the bye. So I want you to get him now. In the next five games, Jordan Reed faces three bottom seven teams against tight ends. Two are just middle of the pack. The other two are just middle of the pack.
Yeah.
But those teams have given up nine games of 60 plus and or a touchdown combined. Those are the tough matchups.
Yeah.
So he's got a great five-game slate. Kittle is out till December, and if San Francisco gets eliminated, Reed might be good to go for the entire season for you.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so go get him now.
All right, Jordan Reed, I like it. Everybody needs tight end help right now. That's a great angle. Brian.
Mine's a little more of a dynasty angle, but I'm going Auden Tate, wide receiver for the Bengals. Now, if something happens to A.J. Green, which might very well happen.
Something's happening now.
He's
like
decomposing
he's
in front of our eyes. But more importantly, T. Higgins, Tate would see more targets. But when he does see targets, he is producing. He's got good size. 6'5", 230 pounds. And
that's,
he leads.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
He makes a lot of really nice looking catches, too.
Next year, Tate and Higgins on the boundaries with Boyd running out of the slot with Joe Burrow is going to be scary. And Tate, despite his opportunities being limited, does lead the team in yards per pass route run. So when he gets the ball, he makes things happen. So if you got a dead dynasty team, he's a good stash right now.
Most of this year's rookie receivers started blowing up right around like week four. You know, they got through what was sort of like their version of the preseason. And, you know, right around week four. Second round pick Denzel Mims didn't play until 3 weeks ago. This is week four coming up for Denzel Mims. You may remember from the draft, Denzel Mims. He's big, he's physical, he's fast. He is a big play downfield threat. In his three games so far, he's been getting a bunch of targets, and the Jets are going to want to work him in for the rest of the season as they try to get some reps for him this year that will pay off next year with Trevor Lawrence. Game scripts always favor the Jets' passing game because they're constantly behind. They're going to be passing throughout. And Mims has got a bunch of plus matchups left, including two in the playoffs. He will face Seattle and Cleveland in the fantasy playoffs, weeks 14 and 16. That might be a flex starter for you in 14 and 16, Denzel Mims. Let's get in our final two matchups of the show, including Kansas City taking on the Raiders. Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, all obvious A's and do not require elaboration. They are my third, first, and first-ranked players at their respective positions. Clyde Edwards-Helaire clocks in with a C grade. He's had a grand total of, since Bell arrived, he's had a grand total of 19 carries.
Not a lot.
Ugh. Even though Bell isn't taking the work, Bell isn't getting any work.
He's scoring touchdowns now, though, somehow.
A little bit. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has posted 80 combo yards and no scores on 13 touches. In the earlier matchup against Las Vegas, he had 80 combo yards and no score. The Raiders haven't allowed a back to top 70 rushing yards in their last six games. So there's just not a lot to like here from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Feels like he's sitting on 50, 60 yards and maybe a chance at a touchdown. Let's hope so. Le'Veon Bell's on the bench, as I mentioned before, almost totally unused since his acquisition by Kansas City. Apparently, not everybody who leaves Adam Gase automatically becomes a star player, because Le'Veon Bell's doing less now with the best offense in the NFL. Go figure. Last guy I'm going to mention, there's a chance that both Sammy Watkins does not play because of his hamstring and Mecole Hardman doesn't clear the COVID protocol. If both of those things happen, then I think you could throw in DeMarcus Robinson, because he'll be on the field like every snap. So he might be a sneaky play if both Watkins and Hardman can't go. Let's flip over to the Raiders side. We'll start with the running game, which makes sense for this team. Josh Jacobs posted 77 yards and two scores against the Chiefs earlier this season. And Kansas City's allowing the sixth most rushing yards. And the game script almost certainly involved another run-heavy attack in an effort to keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. As I mentioned earlier in the show, John Gruden runs the ball 31 times per game. Kansas City sees 29 rushes per game. You figure Josh Jacobs gets like two-thirds of the work? That's 20 touches for Josh Jacobs in. That's an A grade for Josh Jacobs. And Devontae Booker was my take-a-chance-on-me player with a C grade. All right, let's go to the passing game. Derek Carr comes in with a C grade here, posted his best game of the year in the earlier meeting, throwing for 347 yards and three touchdowns. But that was an absolute anomaly for both Carr and the Chiefs against one of the best pass defenses. Carr's average game in the month since that Kansas City win, just 178 yards and 1.3 touchdowns. That's it. That's the real Derek Carr here. He's been under 165 yards in three straight games. And for the Chiefs, they've only allowed 108 yards and one touchdown to the rest of the league other than Derek Carr in the previous game. So let's talk about his receivers. If Derek Carr is a C, who do we like? Darren Waller. Good tight ends have gotten it done against the Chiefs. Hunter Henry and with the Chargers and Mark Andrews and the Ravens and Noah Fant and the Broncos. Tight ends averaged 7 catches, 72 yards. Good tight ends get it done here. Waller had Waller's had at least 5 catches and 60 yards or a score in each of his last three against the Chiefs. And he did well in the previous matchup this year. Everybody else is on the bench. Nelson Aguilar, 3 catches across his last 3 games and a bad matchup. Henry Ruggs, he had the long bomb touchdown when these teams played each other last time. But he's done nothing else all season besides that one long reception. That's it. He is a low, low volume dart throw at best against a very good secondary.
We've said it like a million times already, but just imagine CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy on the Raiders.
Yeah. Or Justin Jefferson.
Or, of course, Justin or Michael Pittman or many other rookies.
They got it wrong. They flat out got it wrong. Our last matchup of the day, Tennessee Titans at the Baltimore Ravens. Scott, this has been a sleepy Tennessee Titans offense, and now they go at Baltimore. This is not a get-right spot.
No, it's really not. The Ravens have only allowed 5 passing touchdowns since Week 3.
Ugh.
That's not many.
No.
Week 4 is the last time a QB threw for more than 230 yards against them. Conversely, Tannehill's best yardage day in the last 4 weeks, this sleepy four-week run, 233 yards.
That's it.
They're just really off. It's a tough draw. I have Tannehill on the bench. I actually have the whole passing game except A.J. Brown on the bench. Sorry about Janu.
I'm with you. Janu's not startable this
week. 8 catches since week 5 for Janu.
Janu.
Yeah, Janu. A.J. Brown, though, he's just too good not to start. He had a terrible week last week, but he had scored in 5 straight prior to that. He's getting 7 targets per game. Even in a tough matchup, if he's getting 7, 8, 9 targets, he might be able to get something done. And they got to pass somewhere. So AJ Brown, I do have a soft B on Derrick Henry, A grade for Derrick Henry. There isn't benching Henry anyway. He scores most weeks, hits 100 most of the time. Ravens have been good against running backs, but Damian Harris just had 122 yards, and he's a big bowler of a running back. Henry's a little bit bigger and a little bit more of a bowler than him. Also, Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams might be missing from that interior defensive line. Mm. If they are, more for Henry. On the other side, Lamar Jackson. Tennessee is bottom five against quarterbacks, but Lamar Jackson only has two games with more than 210 passing yards.
It's ridiculous.
He gets it done on the ground, though.
Does he?
In his first five games, he only had 42 rushes. He's got 40 in his last three alone. He's starting to ramp up that rushing again. I'm still giving him an A grade. It's a bottom five pass defense, so he might be a little more prolific there, and he's getting the rushing, at least recently. Willie Snead and Marquise Brown, this is a matchup call. The Titans are bottom five against wide receivers. They've allowed 19 different wide receivers to top 50 yards. That's C-level production. And the Titans are the worst team in the league against slot receivers, which is good for Snead.
Yeah.
So I have C grades on both of them. Mark Andrews gets an A grade, obvious A grade for me, Boyle out for the season. And you are not touching those running backs with that split.
No, unfortunately.
Absolutely
you can't use any of those running backs right now.
No.
We when Ingram was out, you know, it gave you a glimmer of hope for using Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins.
They both were good for that.
But immediately Ingram comes back last week, they split it up three ways, and now they're all unusable. I can only hope next year we've got a little more clarity and, frankly, one less guy in that backfield for us to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
If you miss any part of the show, you can get all my player rankings available at guillotineleagues.com. We encourage you to go there for that. Also, if you miss any part of the show, you can also listen to the entire thing on the podcast version of Fantasy Football Weekly. Good luck in week number 11, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.